Thank you very much. I would like to talk about the topic euthanasia. And actually, I feel like a little bit of the joke that I heard once about Einstein. He was hearing one of his students talking about the theory of relativism, and he wasn't really a good student. So he listened. He was very polite. And at the end, somebody came to Einstein and asked him, "Tell me, what do you think about your student?" So Einstein said, "You know, everything is relative." Dr. Steinberg is in the audience, and his Chok Steinberg, Chok HaChole HaNotelamut, you will elaborate later on the practical aspects. I would like to be the melamed, like giving the background, the sources. I spoke at the beginning about the website I'm planning to work on to develop. And the focus of my topic is to show the background, the cultural, the clinical background about that. And that is the outline of the talk. I would like to start with historical sources, biblical and Talmudic sources, how they can be interpreted and what we can learn from them. I think it's an excellent example to learn from the slippery slope in history, which is probably the most impressive case of slippery slope in medical ethics and in many developments in history, and to compare it to a little midrash about Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion, how he was dealing with very delicate issues in a very sensitive way. So when I talk about the rabbinical sources and the history, these are really to be compared in order to learn the beauty of the halachical sources, the Talmudic sources. The topic, unfortunately, has a lot of clinical relevance. Recently, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, a protocol was published from Holland, the Groningen Protocol, euthanasia in severely ill newborns. And they have a protocol, as you can see from the table, requirements that can be that must be fulfilled, what stage you can give and you are allowed and you are supposed to give active euthanasia to little newborns who have no prognosis to survive, which is strange because neonatologists know if they have no prognosis, they just die. You don't have to add anything. But they want to develop a concept, give everything you can offer, and you see it doesn't work, just kill him. It's not called killing, it's called euthanasia. Since they cannot do it, you are taking their role, and you say, he better wants to die. His life is not worthy to be lived. And that is a very surprising notion in the New England Journal paper. And at the end, interesting enough, they say in the protocol, at the end, you have to examine a postmortem on the baby to make sure the diagnosis was not wrong. Meaning, you have in mind it can be a mistake, and even though you feel you are allowed or you have the obligation to kill, I was very disturbed to read that and had a response to the Groningen Protocol, the Jewish perspective, and they responded. And I was really shocked to see that they did not deal with the real issues and had practical issues in mind, which I can really not share, not only for committed to the Jewish sources, I think to any sensitivity to the concept of euthanasia strictly forbids an approach like that. As I mentioned, and you know this slide meanwhile, we have here a beautiful example how, as articulated by Siegel in the Encyclopedia of Bioethics, how to combine different approaches from our sources to the clinical aspects. The State of Israel is an example of a newly emerging society that is attempting to harmonize traditional values embedded in an ancient religious tradition with a contemporary outlook in confronting the concerns and dilemmas of bioethics. You have a beautiful example how our sources can contribute to the general debate, the secular debate of euthanasia. I would like to give a brief historical background and to clarify the definitions of euthanasia. I used to do that with the students who come for rotations and want to hear what do they know about euthanasia. In order to make it very easy for them, I say it in a very pronounced German accent, which I have anyway, but I'm telling them, "Yesh lachem musak ma ze euthanasie program." And I really ask them, "Tell me more about it," and I'm shocked to see that they really don't know enough about that. And I think that to know the background about euthanasia, and might be the background about Jewish medical ethics and Holocaust and the history of the Holocaust and medicine and Holocaust, really is a very important issue, not only for Jews, but for general education in medicine. So the definition is the action of inducing gentle and easy death. Action is, by definition, active euthanasia. There is a lot of confusion with the term. The etymology is you, oi, and thanatos, death, good death. Surprisingly enough, this term, created by, introduced by Lecky, a free thinker in the late 19th century, introduced by him because at that time the process of death was not just the end stage of any disease where you cannot do anything. It was, it could be, they tried to prolong it and keep him alive as much as possible. So at that stage, there was also the concept, how far should we go? Should we really try everything possible, or is there a state that you can say, kill him actively? Before, it was not really that much an issue, but we will see from the Jewish sources that there indeed are issues and thinking about that. What is fascinating, that the term, that the etymology of good death, created in the 19th century, we actually find it in the Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin, as I will show you in a few minutes. Many philosophers are among advocates, and there was a discussion about it in many sources. I will not go into detail of the classical sources. Hippocrates says, I will give no deadly medicine to anyone if asked, nor suggest any such counsel. Another example that the Hippocratic Oath, if it is relevant, it should be handled in another way, and there's really a lot to think about. The Hippocratic Oath, where it said, I think one of the most important issues, I will give no deadly medicine to anyone if asked, nor suggest any such counsel. That is not what is done today in medical ethics, so the rest of the oath is not as informative. The confusion in the topic is that we talk today about active and passive euthanasia, to withdraw treatment, to withhold treatment, a term which causes a lot of confusion, in my opinion, is PAS, the physician-assisted suicide. To talk about suicide is a very interesting talk, but the definition is a person kills himself. If he's not killing himself, it is not suicide, somebody else kills him. So if somebody else kills him, it might be sight, killing by somebody else, but not a physician-assisted. If it is physician-assisted, it is killing. You ask the question if it is allowed. Yes, there are cases that we are allowed to kill a murderer for his criminal act, but that is not a question of suicide, it's not a question of euthanasia, it's a question of criminal law. And that, of course, doesn't affect here. And here, I feel there's a lot of confusion of the terms which are not used in a systematic way. As was mentioned by Professor Steinberg, in Switzerland, where I trained, there's a strong trend for active euthanasia. Of course, if you come to Switzerland, you have to pay first. They make sure that there's a business, and there are really centers where you can make good money out of it. They come, pay first, and go home in debt. It's a very confusing attitude, and I have really difficulties to understand how people can support that in such an active way. As I mentioned, the euthanasia program, I would like to elaborate a little on this topic, since I trust it is not only historically interesting, we should learn from history in order to have a better insight. And on this very packed slide, we can see that the euthanasia program came much earlier than the final solution. It was like the case study, how to come to the final solution. And the case study, because the people who were in charge of the euthanasia program, they were later on in charge in the East to perform the final solution. They were talking about terms like eugenie, eugenics, Volksgesundheit, the health of the nation, not the individual. Don't look at the individual patient, look at the nation, Volksgesundheit, the national health. And the term euthanasia was not used, even though supported ideologically, but instead of calling it euthanasia, they called it T4. Sounds much better, because it is an abbreviation of Tiergartenstrasse 4 in Berlin, so you don't really hear any meaning of the word, you just hear a letter and a figure. People were killed beforehand, and what is interesting, I tracked after the history of Dr. Karl Brandt, who supported the concept of euthanasia with one child when it was in 1938. And there's an interesting paper on his career, so-called career, that he was asked by a physician to kill a mentally retarded child, and later on he developed this experience from one child to kill many others. So this slippery slope in the person, he was also active in the Aktionbrand, killing chronically ill terminal patients. More than 250,000 people are are recorded to be killed in the T4 program, it started with one child. Interesting that Bischof Clemens Galen Münster, when he heard about these activities, he officially publicly protested against it and was successful that it was stopped in Germany, the euthanasia activity. It was stopped officially and all activities were moved to the east. Nobody knew about it, nobody saw it, and it was not accessible anymore to the public at that stage. A very powerful example of slippery slope. If we go back, the theory of euthanasia goes back, and we have to be careful to say goes back, but at least the word, the term goes back to Immanuel Kant, when he spoke less than 15 years later, when the term was created. He spoke as the big philosopher, the famous philosophers of Germany, he spoke about the euthanasie des Judentums, to euthanize Judaism. He had certainly not in mind what was done in Auschwitz and in the concentration camps, but philosophically, I think we have to be very careful, very much aware that the Holocaust did not start with Hitler. That was early on in these theories. The concept, which this picture shows very clearly, is they are a burden for society. Since they are a burden for society, there is no issue of the kucholim, of support, of avtalara kamocha. Look at the burden of society. It says in the text that here you carry, you are supporting this. It says here, hier trägst du mit. I'm reading from here. A person suffering from a hereditary defect costs till the age of 60 approximately 60,000 Reichsmark. So it's very expensive. And you see the German is suffering, the society, town suffers, and here you have like two animals, they're not human beings anymore. That is, I think, says more than 1,000 words, this picture. What brought afterwards to the six centers of Hadama and the other centers where the euthanasia program was performed, not on Jews, on handicapped people. And as pointed out by the famous paper by Leo Alexander in Medical Science Under Dictatorship in New England Journal, he was in Nuremberg a doctor trials, he says, that is the beginning of euthanasia, that there is such a thing as life not worthy to be lived. And here is really the challenge to bring meaning to a life where there are a lot of challenges, including chronically ill and dying patients, to show meaning. And really meaningful that the talk by Rabbi Glatt showed the beauty of Bikur Cholim and to show this mitzvah. It begins, as shows Leo Alexander, had started from small beginnings. I want to show here what he says at the end. Corrosions begins in microscopic proportion, as we saw by Brandt. And I would like now to go to the Jewish sources to talk about these small beginnings. The doctor trials in Nuremberg, they actually were the birth of international bioethics. If we talk today about guidelines, international guidelines, it's true there were medical oaths and guidelines by the American Association of in the 1858, if I remember correctly, they gave guidelines. But in an international level, it started after the Holocaust, and that is the beginning of international birth. I would like to share with you, after the doctor trials, a very interesting chidush halakha lemaaseh. How is, and I think we can learn about the mechanism of halakha when the halakha is not clearly spelled out. And there was a question in the 60s when Eichmann was brought to Israel, and the rabbis were asking the questions, can we kill him legally? There was not a hatra'a, there were no shnei edim, it's not sure that he personally killed anybody. How can we kill him? And this question was discussed. Of course, everybody is shocked that we ask a question, crime like Eichmann, and we ask a question, is there a heter to kill him? Is there a chiyuv to kill him? And we actually have the answer in our Parashat HaShavua, where it says, uvi'arta hara mikirbecha. You should eradicate bad things from your society. There is a general chiyuv of uvi'arta hara mikirbecha. And the Gemara, the Tosefta says, as pointed out in the paper by Rav Shimon Federbusch, Mishpat Eichmann Bahalacha, if there is a crime, a murderer like Eichmann, don't go into details to ask the pitch of this. There is a din of uviyata ara mikirbecha. Regardless, and the Tosefta says, kol chayvei mitot sheba Torah, she'i ata yachol hamito b'mita chamura shebahem, hamito b'echad mikol hamitot ben kalot ben chamurot, she'nemar uviyata ara mikirbecha. If you don't have all the sources, all the proofs, he wants to learn from this source that there is an overriding principle. And I think it fits very well also to understand how to deal with issues like crime, like Eichmann, but to understand the principles of halakha, there is a logic into it that we learned from the Rashba, that צריך שמשפטי התורה יהיו מסכימים אל השכל ואל הסברה. It has to be logic. So that's just to summarize that I think future ethics education, not only for Jews, Holocaust and medicine are excellent platform to go in more details. I would like now to talk specifically about the issue of euthanasia. And of course there are plus and minus. The four principles are applied: die in dignity, there's no obligation to prolong life of sufferers from incurable and painful diseases. On the other hand, as we discussed, slippery slope, there are errors, there are surprising cases, and there is no active, no right or obligation to actively induce death, what is killing. The Jewish sources are extremely rich, but it's not easy to identify them properly. Since we didn't have the classic cases of ventilation, of prolonged situation of a chronically ill, we can learn from Midrashim, we can learn from halachot, related to questions like Lamut al Kiddush Hashem, and people who are suffering from tortures, rather than classically euthanasia. Even though I think studying these sources makes it very interesting to identify the same principles and to learn from that, lefi haposkim, what we can learn. And here I have these red arrows, that there are many sources. I will not go in detail to discuss all of them. It is a wonderful learning just to see the sources and to see how the sources were aware, or at least the achronim, how they identified useful clinical principles in the classical sources.